I like transparency reports. There are great intentions behind it, but it's Roaster's publishing transparency reports, but they're not publishing their own data. They're publishing the farmer's data or the exporter's data.
Mm.
But they're not publishing their own wholesale prices. They're not publishing their discounts, their strategies. And coffee producers could benefit a lot from this type of information.
This episode is proudly brought to you by Mapper Forward's workshop, It's Time to Become a Coffee Consultant. Learn how to diversify your revenue streams and create freedom from your day job while saying goodbye to that alarm clock forever by becoming a consultant within the coffee industry or directly to consumers who have shifted towards home brewing and home roasting. Protect your income from challenging times in the coffee value chain by taking this course today. Go to mapperforward.coffee/workshops or click the link in the show notes for details. Welcome to the Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward, friends. I'm your host, Lee Safar, and this is episode 2 of a 5-part series, a very interesting 5-part series where we're talking about the validity of specialty coffee in 2024 and beyond. In the last episode, Bram and I discussed what specialty coffee is. In this episode, we're going to talk about the status quo in specialty coffee. Now, Bram, you are involved in an interesting project called Paso Paso. Tell us about Paso Paso because it is the opposite of the status quo.
Exactly. And that's why I started it in it. So it's a coffee roastery. That's the first and foremost thing. We are a coffee roastery, and we are owned by coffee producers from Costa Rica, from Nicaragua, from El Salvador, from Ethiopia. They're all owners. You can go to the court here. You can ask for our documents, and you will see the shareholders of this company are coffee producers. And I'm very proud that we made that work because that was not easy. It's not easy to challenge the status quo, indeed, because the world is not set up for projects like this.
So go ahead, please.
Yeah, so I was just going to say we buy coffee from the people that own us. So it's separate business, right? I'm just still negotiating coffee in a way with my own partners. But of course, it's a very different conversation, right? I get coffee from the coffee producers. I'm in Germany. I'm in Hanover, Germany. I roast them. I sell them. So it's really the ownership that is different. But that's not just a piece of paper, right?
Are you an owner as well?
I'm an owner as well.
Yes. Right. So there's how many partners in total?
In total, there is 10 partners in 5 farms because there's some family farms as well.
Okay. So you guys, the producers provide the coffee for the roastery?
Yes, but we pay them normal. Right. There's no consignment. Right. They're really, the farms and the roastery should be profitable separate from each other.
Right.
That's one of our statutes, actually.
The roastery purchases from each of the producers. The producers separate from their farm are part owners in a roastery. So they're separate businesses.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And then the roastery goes about the business of operating as a standalone business, the same way a roastery would operate. But from what I understand, and this is what I'd love to dive into, the status quo is very different to that.
Exactly.
In this scenario, you have eliminated the majority of the middlemen. The status quo has the middlemen. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure you haven't eliminated all of the middlemen because you can't just fairy dust the coffee from Ethiopia.
Exactly.
to Germany. So there are some ships involved and customs involved and all of that kind of stuff. So help people understand the difference between what Paso Paso is doing and the status quo.
Exactly. So before I kind of laid it out really plain and simple to show more drastically, right? Because of course we're not just a coffee roaster. We're a coffee roaster owned by coffee producers. And this is actually really special because it doesn't exist. This is a small scale, but as a collective, multiple coffee producers together owning a coffee roastery, it simply doesn't exist in this world, to my knowledge. If you are out there, if you have the same project, let me know. And normally, the coffee producers, they stop obtaining value after the coffee has been exported. If they are exporting, it's time after the mill or after picking, whatever. And in my research, I did study coffee as well, but my thesis about coffee, the majority of value is generated in roasting and retailing. This makes sense because they take the previous value, do something with it, and sell it for more value.
How are you defining value?
Dollars or euros.
Okay.
So you buy a pound of green coffee for $4 and you sell it for 12.
Mm-hmm.
And that jump is large in coffee roasting. And then I was thinking about talking with these producers, actually visiting them and living in Costa Rica, having beers. And like, you know, there's all these solutions to the coffee industry's problems, like plant more coffee or produce higher quality or get certified. And they're all focused on coffee production. But if you look at where is a lot of value generated, which is not in coffee production, you can look at roasting and retailing and say, well, if we can capture that value and bring it back in a more meaningful ways to the farm, then we can probably more, how would you say this, more logically, with more resources, fend off these other problems, right? And mm-hmm. I thought about, you know, tip the farmer or pay more for coffee, but it's all still transactional. And I wanted mm-hmm. to transcend this. And a part of this comes from because I could see when I was a coffee buyer, see the roasters I was buying for grow tremendously. From one shop to 3 to 10 to 20 over the course of 3-4 years. And coffee producers just cannot obtain that same growth. It's simply impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to enable that growth for coffee producers as well. So that's why I wanted to invite them to become owners of this company. So now they own different parts of the supply chain, operating separately from each other, but gaining not only dividends from that if we turn a profit, but also a lot of data, a lot of information about the market, about how their coffee behaves, about how other people's coffee behaves. And there's just so much knowledge still not going back to origin as well. When I like transparency reports, there are great intentions behind it, but it's roasters publishing transparency reports, but they're not publishing their own data. They're publishing the farmer's data or the exporter's data.
Mm.
But they're not publishing their own wholesale prices. They're not publishing their discounts, their strategies. And coffee producers could benefit a lot from this type of information as well. And so I'm also making all this information, all this data available to the producers. And that's what really sets the roastery apart for the producers. For the consumers, and this is going back to our previous conversation, we're 5 farms. We're going to have coffee from these 5 farms and nothing else. Maybe we'll have, we don't have Colombian coffee. For example, we don't have Brazilian coffee. Nothing against these countries at all. I just didn't make as close as friends there as I did in the other countries. But the consumers can rely on our offering and they can really get to know these producers better. Because year after year, they can see our progress of the roastery and of the farmers. We can share more in depth about them. I think that ever-rotating offer list can be numbing to consumers, right? If it's just a bag of coffee with a name on it, an exotic place reference, altitude and a process, after so many bags, that information starts to lose its value. Right, it's just again another great special coffee from somewhere far away with a copyrighted text on a website. And I wanted to transcend that. I wanted to bring back real stories from real people and develop them, not as a one-off, not as a copy-paste one-off. This is a guy, he lives somewhere, etc. No, people, our consumers, our clients, they can really get to engage and live our story and live the producer stories in the coming years. And the producers own this story as well, right? They get to choose how they represent themselves.
Because they're business partners and they get to help make decisions of the way that the company goes, I suspect.
Exactly, yeah. So that's another part indeed I didn't say. They're owners and they get dividends. If we make profit, they get information, they get data, but they're also very engaged in decision-making. We have meetings. We have a board made of the producers, We have shareholder meetings. We make decisions based on our statutes, which we wrote together, about how do we make decisions, how do we do everything. And I lean on them for their expertise, for their advice, and also to make the decision about what they want to do with their coffee, which sometimes I don't agree with, but I'm just a minority owner and I'm a minority owner. They are the majority owner together. So they shape the company. It's their company. I'm running it for them. I'm an owner as well, but it's really a collective.
I have to ask, I've got my consultant hat on here. I have to ask, have you guys disagreed on anything yet?
Very little. Some things, yes. Style of communication, branding, we had to soften out some tears in the fabric here and there. And also, but for example, a topic we discussed last week is about white label roasting, Tor roasting, that I am accepting Tor roasting requests at our roastery because we need to make money. You're a consultant.
Right.
I make our P&L every month. I'm a responsible business owner. I keep our finances in check. I feel very responsible for our finances because it is directly affecting the coffee producers as well. And I said, okay, well, this is not making a lot of money, but at least it's using our production slots. And the producer said, well, you know, it's good indeed. We need to keep our head above water these first months because they're the most difficult months. But we don't want other people to run off with our coffee, basically. We want to protect our coffee's integrity. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, that's an interesting take. I didn't think of that myself. But they didn't want me to be,
you have to run
throwing away our cards. Well, I'm looking at it from the business side. I'm like, well, you know, I really need to pay the rent each month, and this is helping. And they agree with that. They said, okay, but it's like, hey, Bram, let's not focus on this. Let's focus on our brand, our story, and let's not let other people not do any of the work and take our work and your work and then sell it to these customers ourselves. And I thought that was an interesting take. I didn't think of it myself. But I didn't. I pushed back a bit because I do want our finances to be solid. Mm-hmm. They agreed with that. Like, you know, let's not focus on this. Let's focus on something.
So,
I'm like, okay.
So let's say that 1 year a producer's coffee went out of control expensive.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So this is why I set up this project. Because these things happen. Either coffee becomes expensive because of in-country situations, quality drops, and year after year, I would see roasters pull out, right, from relationships because it didn't suit them anymore. And I am bound by my hands to not do that. By my hands, by my integrity.
By your business partners.
By my business partners. And we don't all know each other, actually. We haven't all met. Some people have met, but most of them have never met. But we are all in this boat together, and we have this really strong group feeling already. So I'm sure that the producers would support me to help out the other producer as well.
That's the wonderful thing about business. It will show you everything you never wanted to know about yourself and about your business partners.
Exactly.
And that's exciting.
Yeah. And I think going back to, I haven't thought about this. Well, I thought about it a little bit, but not so much in deep. So I appreciate the question. And I think I said before, we are five farms. We're going to be five farms. And we're going to have the same offering year after year. And I feel like with that, we can really build that connection between the consumers who would really like either a story or a coffee. We're really allowing people to choose you want to buy based on feeling or story or quality. We have the whole range. And if they do that, if they get to know this story and if they've been buying this coffee for 2 or 3 years, and then it becomes a couple euros more expensive than keto, I think they'll go with it. They'll go with it much more easier as an anonymous blend becoming more expensive. I feel like, or that's my goal, to create these deeper connections with the consumer so we can prepare for these type of issues if they do occur. And on the other hand, if I can continue, mm-hmm. the roastery can suck up so much more than a producer as a business.
I guess. I mean, it also
I
depends.
I hope so.
You hope so. Yeah. And it, given that you guys have cut out a few of the middlemen,
mm-hmm.
it means you'll be able to absorb some of the shocks that are coming over this next couple of years more so than I suspect the businesses that are operating with the status quo. What do you, just in the last couple minutes of this episode, mm-hmm. make a comparison between what the status quo is versus what you guys are doing?
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. So the Swiss coal supply chain hasn't changed, right, in the last 50 years for commodity coffee, for specialty coffee. For the matter, for us as a discounter, we still use, indeed, as you said, companies that export paperwork, ship the coffee, warehouse the coffee, finances, that all exist. And that's going to exist in commodity coffee. That's going to exist in specialty coffee. And anybody who is drawing you a picture of, hey, this is the producer and hey, this is the roaster and we're connected magically, that's just not true.
It's horse shit. Anyone who keeps telling you about direct purchasing and whatever, there is mm-hmm. no fairy dust that takes coffee from origin to a consuming country. There are always people in the middle.
Exactly. And now that we have that clear, we can look at what did specialty coffee do different. Okay, mm-hmm. we started to document the supply chain mm-hmm. more. And we started to be more traceable and at times buy the coffee also traceable. Say, okay, we bought from this farm instead of that farm, etc. And that's what specialty coffee did different, and it did that based on quality more than anything else. And then that's the logistics of it. The trading of it, so talking about sea markets, who pays who, et cetera, that hasn't changed too much either with specialty. Although it's a claim that often is true, if we look at the 80 to 84-point range of specialty coffees that most roasters do build their business on, that is still traded as commodity coffee. Or I would put it 80% of volume of specialty coffee drank, roasted, is still traded based on the commodity model, using mm-hmm. the steam market, using differentials. They're just being selected better. They're being milled better. They're being paid for better. Yes, slightly. Not as much as people tend to claim, I guess. So not much has changed between the traditional coffee supply chain and the specialty chain. Things have changed, but the basics, the fundamentals are still the same. Including the fundamental of companies in the north or south, if you're in Australia, buying a raw material, shipping it, manufacturing it, tripling, quadrupling its value, and keeping all the generated value, capital gains, everything for themselves. And that was the main driver for me to change. I don't discard the idea that coffee should be roasted fresh, that customers should have a roastery to visit, that we have to deliver great customer service, etc. That's all still needed. And that's the only reason why coffee roasteries are in consuming countries, right? It's just a foodstuff that needs to be produced fresh, delivered with low costs, etc.
Mm.
There are people who claim that people in producing countries cannot roast or whatever, which is complete horseshit as well, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a geographical question. Why is coffee roasted in the country where it's consumed? Because it needs to be.
It extends the shelf life. It's easy. It's
exactly. Let's not. Yeah, everybody knows that. But then a geographic limitation does not limit ownership. It does not limit who's making money off it.
Mm-hmm.
And we can accept that it does, right? Oh yeah, it's because it's in Germany, because it's in the US, it has to be German and American people doing it. And it makes sense, of course, that's how the world was built for the last centuries. But that's the idea I wanted to challenge with Paso, to keep all the physical stuff in place because it works.
Mm-hmm.
It's efficient, it's financed, etc. That all works great. But it's leaving out the coffee producers, right, to have access to those gains. And that's the only thing that changed. Now, as owners, they can access those higher returns. And also, in the same time, gain data, participate in decision making, and enjoy producing coffee more, I would say.
At this point, this point, is it a hypothetical, or have you guys actually started producing monthly reports? Have you gone through a customer acquisition plan and started executing it? Do you have customers? How long have you had customers for?
Yeah, this is a plan. The idea started already 3 years ago, and I've worked proactively on this plan for the last 16 months. We've written various business plans, and we started in November. We haven't turned a profit, obviously, yet.
Do you have customers, though, other than the white labeling customers?
We are starting now, so we're now starting with the acquisition plan.
Great.
A lot of work went into actually setting up the company, the boring legal process in which all the producers had to go to the German embassy in their country, send powers of attorney by mail, head up a bank account, which they didn't want us to give us because they couldn't validate the shareholders' addresses, for example. So that whole painful process we've been through, and then we went through the fun process of branding. And now is actually the time we're just getting started now. So it is hypothetical. The profit part is hypothetical. But in the end, that wasn't actually the reason why the producer signed up for this. It was a principle thing. It was a visionary thing. Mm-hmm. Of course, we want to turn a profit in the future and distribute that. But in the end, it became an idea, right? It became a vision to challenge the status quo. And for me personally, I'm not in it for the money personally either. I wanted to challenge the coffee industry, and I want to show what else can we do? How much more can we do? And how content should we be with how the specialty coffee industry looks like right now? Are we doing enough? And hopefully other coffee roasteries follow suit, or other producers follow suit.
Okay. Now that we know what the status quo is, we're going to challenge it even further. In the next episode, because I have some problems with the current status quo. As those who listen to this podcast know, and I seem to be becoming more frustrated by the day. So I want to challenge that even further. So join us in the next episode, folks. Peace, love, and peanut butter. Have an amazing rest of your day.
I really hope you enjoyed this episode, friends. Please don't forget to show us some love by subscribing, liking, commenting, and most of all, sharing this podcast with your friends. Check the show notes for links, including our sponsors and our Patreon. And stay tuned for more great conversations on The Daily Coffee Pro by Mapper Forward.